Production support for Earth Eats comes from Charles Schwab and Company Incorporated, whose local branch is now located at 1155 College Mall Road. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. Offering signature drinks, teas, and little eats. Located on Pete Ellis Drive. NeedMoreRoasters.com. From WFIU, I'm Kate Young, and this is Earth Eats.
This is my opportunity to only talk about those colors, and then somehow the lusciousness of the frosting, the cakiness of the cake, the smoothness of the plastic in that refrigerator, all like somehow mingle themselves into that, and that's exciting to me.
On our show this week, a conversation with artist Molly Douthat about her painting practice involving food, kitchen spaces, and food's power to connect us with the past and with the people we love. And we have a recipe for a delicious salad that can serve as a meal in itself, featuring wild rice and feta cheese. Stay with us. Alex Chambers is back with some news. Hey there, Alex.
Hey, Kate. As you know, the government shutdown is stretching into its third week, and it's affecting everything from trash in the national parks to lines at the airport. I've got some updates as to how it's affecting people who grow food and those of us who eat it. The USDA is one of 9 government agencies that ceased normal operations as of December 22nd. Many of the USDA's operations will continue through the shutdown. That includes meat, poultry, and egg inspections and caring for research animals and plants. But a number of services are on hold, including the county offices of the USDA Farm Service Agency. That means farmers are still waiting for bailout payments from the trade war. The National Farmers Union said the closure of the offices could not have come at a worse time for members awaiting emergency aid. And Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program benefits are safe so far. Congress appropriated funds to keep SNAP funded through January. But there's no plan for February and beyond. SNAP has a $3 billion emergency fund, but the monthly cost of the program often exceeds that amount by $1 billion or more. In addition to SNAP benefits, the Bureau of Indian Affairs provides services to about 1.9 million American Indians and Alaska Natives. That includes a food distribution program on Indian reservations that helped feed about 90,000 Native Americans in 2017. The program is funded through January, but if the shutdown goes beyond that, state and tribal agencies will have to pick up the tab. And that's the news. Thanks to Taylor Killow for those updates.
Thank you, Alex, for keeping us in the know.
No problem, Kate.
Molly Douthat is a professional artist. She's a painter. She currently lives in Grand Forks, North Dakota, with her parents. She teaches art at a local middle school. Molly says it wouldn't be Christmas without the Kiss cookie. Her mom makes it every year. But Molly admits it isn't her favorite. We agree that the chocolate-to-cookie ratio is a bit off. So, she painted it. One tiny dab of peanut butter dough with a Hershey's Kiss on top, nestled neatly in the divot of the crackled cookie. And then she sent that little quarter-inch image of the cookie to me, mounted on a card with a holiday greeting. It might possibly be the best Christmas card ever created. And it reminded me of our conversation in November about paint and food and memory and connection with the people we love. I started by asking Molly how she got started painting food and kitchen spaces.
So I had an exhibition in 2017 at the museum in my hometown. And like I was really struggling with how to build work for the show. And I think I was trying to find my voice as a painter and figure out things. And I think as you're searching for your artistic voice, you're not looking in the right places. I got frustrated in my studio that was not close to my house. And I brought my easel home. I set it up and I started painting my kitchen, just whatever was happening. And it would be like milk jugs or whatever. And I've always gravitated towards food as a subject matter, but it really exploded with that work. My grandparents owned a restaurant when I was growing up, and it was a steakhouse, and they actually lived at the restaurant. So it was like me sort of like talking to my family through this medium that means so much to me. And I think that's really, it defined why I'd been painting food so much in the past, and it liberated me into like continuing that as like a subject matter that's quite central.
So you weren't living near your family at that time?
No, I actually did my master's in Ireland, and then I was able to stay in Ireland, and I was a painter there for many years. And then in 2017, I just decided it coincided with the show, and just for a few reasons, I thought it was about time that I come home.
So can you talk a little bit about your current living situation and where you paint and what that looks like?
So right now I live with my family, which is, it's really nice. And I've embraced the mobile studio. I have an afternoon job, which is really convenient. So when my parents go to work, I typically like make myself a really nice breakfast. And then I have an easel that I bring upstairs. And, you know, the kitchen is one of those spaces that always, it typically doesn't have carpet. And in our house, it's the only place that doesn't have carpet. So it's where I feel safest to put that easel. And next thing I know, I'm looking around and I'm learning that your life is always in sort of transition. Like things can always change. My hometown went through a flood. So that losing your objects, but still knowing why they're important to you is a way for me to connect through painting. So knowing that I might be leaving this space, you know, probably moving out at some point, it really has helped me surface a lot of subject matter, like a recipe book that my mom has had for years, and being able to really spend time with that. And through painting, painting just gives me patience to sit and look and find those colors and sort of, you know, I really love the cream against like a red and actually getting to create that. So that's my setup right now, is just setting up in the kitchen mainly and finding.
So when you're talking about exploring your mom's recipe book, you're not talking about cooking from it, you're talking about painting it.
Absolutely. My family and I have slightly different eating habits, and this was, it's kind of like my bridge into there, still talking about the things, about how much I love them and about how much these objects mean to me, and how much, even though I don't eat her apple pork chops anymore, the book that contains that recipe still means something to me.
I've been really interested in the way that food is related to memory and the way that food connects people. I just wonder if you could say anything about what you think about food and its power to connect, or its power to kind of jar memory.
Yeah, absolutely. Even before the paintings really took off as like, this is my thing, I think in grad school I had made this painting of Ritter Sport, which is a chocolate from Germany, and It brings back a lot of memories of a very good friend that I have in Germany and our love for Ritter Sport. But I painted this painting, and then the title is Not the Greatest. I suppose that's the point. And the title is referencing the fact that this is like, Ritter Sport is very good chocolate, but it's regular chocolate. But I'd rather eat that chocolate than a new chocolate that's more swanky, because Ritter Sport brings me back to a better place than swanky chocolate. And I think that's the power that food has over us, and And it can be a very good power, especially when you're in times of needing a piece of fruit or sport.
And you had talked about when you first discovered your interest in painting kitchens and places where food is prepared and food itself, that it was a way for you to connect across distance and time to your grandparents and their restaurant and your family's relationship with food.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just thinking of all of the things over the years that maybe I've painted that even, you know, I remember a clove of garlic. And that's the other thing, too, is the beauty of cooking your own food is that you're involved in the process. And there's such joy in making something that you're going to eat. You know, I'm not painting from photos. I'm sitting with these pieces of food and I'm smelling them. And food is, it's such a connector. And I do think that maybe when my eating habits changed as far as leading more of a like plant-based vegetarian lifestyle, it still remained a way that I could express something to people. This summer I was able to, or I guess this fall, paint my dad's birthday cake, which was German chocolate, which my grandma, that was your birthday cake every year, no matter who you were, she made German chocolate cake. And I still eat that. And it's, yeah, the taste of that brings me back to her. I remember in high school coming home and like watching Mario Batali, aside from everything we know now, but and sort of just watching him walk through Italy, you know, discovering and just being so connected to simplicity in food. And I think that's the beauty of connecting with a raw material, and that's also what painting is. You know, you're just dealing with oil and stone that's been ground into a paste. Well, that's pesto. You know, it's like that's just taking one thing and touching it in a way that can all of a sudden transform it. Look around your kitchen. There's weird stuff that happens, and at least maybe in my family there it is. But you know, someone decided to clean our kitchen. Well, not someone, obviously one of the three people who live there decided to clean the kitchen. The kitchen gets cleaned. And you know when you're cleaning and you kind of like put something somewhere because you're going to take care of it in a minute because you're just wiping something down? I'm assuming that's what happened. But like 3 tablespoons of butter, still in the package, got put in the water dispenser for like, in a fridge where you would put your glass to like get water automatically, put it in the tray. And it sat there. And it was kind of, at first I was like, oh, I should put that away. And then it was a moment of, I think I'm just going to wait and see who's going to take care of it first. And it sort of became this mind game. And then I was like, it's sort of like leaving just a little bit of milk in a jug. And then, you know, and that's what I call a paintable moment, is like, that's, I don't know, had I not painted that, I don't know if I would have remembered it. And it's funny. It's so funny. But then, for me, like, it's so exciting to build the yellow, like, buttery yellow can be a very challenging color to make, but accomplishing that was a lot of fun. Cakes are, like, something that I really like to paint, and my mom is really big on kind of birthday cakes. That's always sort of an event with us. And so I wanted to make her birthday cake really nice for her. And coconut is one of those flavors that people are either like passionate or not passionate about. She likes it. So I was like, I'm going to put coconut on her cake this year. And so I painted it. And then I tried to do this really nice pink frosting, but it didn't look very good. Anyhow, I put the cake in the...
You painted it or you made it?
Oh, sorry. I made it. And then we ate some of it. And then it went into a fridge. And then I opened up the fridge door. And we have a couple fridges in our house. And this was the basement fridge, so it's quite empty. And I opened it up, and it was like this white empty fridge with a white cake, because she likes white cake. And I used a 7-minute frosting, and then this like bright pink. And it was like these kind of like, there's three different whites happening there, plus then like this pop of pink. And I think painting is, this is my opportunity to only talk about those colors. And then somehow the lusciousness of the frosting, the cakiness of the cake, the smoothness of the plastic in that refrigerator, all like somehow mingle themselves into that. And that's exciting to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
What about the time that you were painting watermelon in your kitchen?
Oh, yeah. There were like baby watermelons for sale. Brought one home and I cut it up. And I put it in a bowl, and the bowl happened to be like bright green. And then all of the watermelons these days are seedless, so it didn't have seeds. And then I had just put it on the stovetop, and the stove was black. And I kind of looked down and I was like, oh my God, it's the bowl is green, that's its rind. And then the stovetop was black. And it was really exciting because I thought, wow, I've completed the watermelon. And then again, that's where I get that opportunity to talk about when you can make like bright pink, opaque bright pink, and then find slightly darker maroonish red that adds depth, it's like, I don't know, I kind of freak out, especially when you're putting it on. And then once you, you know, put it on the surface of the canvas, and you're like, well, that moment's over, moving on, onto the green. Yeah. I just get this like nudge in me, and I'm like, okay, like I have to paint. And there was actually one Sunday when my niece was over, who was teething. My brother-in-law, my sister were there. Mom's making spaghetti, and it's Sunday, and the house is full, and it's hot. And I was inspired. And I think, bless their souls, they didn't mind. And I set up in the kitchen, and I was painting it. And my parents, most everyone knows not to talk to me when I'm painting, you know, super concentrated. And then like kind of afterwards, my mom comes up to me and she's like, that was brilliant. You know, like 5 minutes ago, I thought, I don't know what she's doing. Because she saw it sort of like midway through. She's like, you really kind of pulled that one off, didn't you? I was like, and this is why no one's allowed to talk to me when I'm painting. I don't need peanut galleries.
That's great, though. Even though they couldn't talk to you, you were sort of integrated into the moment of the family, and they got to watch your process, even if they couldn't interact directly.
Yeah, absolutely.
After a quick break, we'll return to my conversation with Molly Douthit. She has a story about a TV tray, a placemat, and the power of paint to invoke emotions of gratitude and shared history. I'm Kate Young, and you're listening to Earth Eats. Production support comes from Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. The Clean Bedroom, offering organic mattresses, adjustable beds, and pillows, helping mindful customers create a sustainable and organic clean bedroom step by step. New York City, Boston, and now Indianapolis. More at thecleanbedroom.com. And Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, whose local branch is now located at 1155 College Mall Road. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Coming off of the holidays, many of you listening may have spent time with family, hosting or returning to your family home, perhaps. And among the many things that families can disagree about, it seems food can stir up some deep divisions. After all, food is tied to culture and identity. Many of us leave home and strike out on new culinary paths,
develop new food preferences, restrictions, or even principles about what we will and will not eat. A place where we may have once come together, the family table, can become fragmented and tense. Our guest, Molly Douthat, a painter, returned to her family home after living abroad for years. Many things had changed, including Molly's diet. But she's found ways to continue to connect with her family over food, even if they aren't always eating the same thing.
You mentioned that you had gone through a rough patch recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, moving home, I had a lot of probably culture shock and just like shift in like what was happening in my life and where I was going and a lot of questions. And I think luckily I was living with my family. There was a point where I was eating dinner like in front of my mom every night, like just really upset about life and about things. And I was, you know, and I'd sit in the living room, actually. I'd bring my dinner out there and I'd sit there and I'd just be like a pile. And that went on for months. And then when I sort of started to come out of that, I made this painting of my, it's a terrible painting. It's pretty crappy. It's of this couch. And then we have those like little TV trays and it has a TV tray on it with a placemat. And now I look, and this is how painting, like, this is why I paint. I look at that painting, and the entire thing is like a weird shade of gray, except for the placemat. And what I'm thinking of is the fact that, like, this woman sat across from me and, like, knew that I was going to come out of whatever I've been in and was patient enough because I didn't think that was going to happen. So it has nothing even to do with, like, I was making my food, but it was about sharing a moment with someone. And I'm so, so, so grateful to be home, to have come out of that. And that's why I want to celebrate the things that we do share, even if it's just the outside of a recipe book.
Mm-hmm. You mean the things you share with your parents?
Yeah, yeah. And those things that I grew up with and those things that have really grounded me since coming home. This is still here, you know, and you're okay with the thing, kind of like finding sameness is sometimes like a really way to help cope. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Molly Douthat is a painter living in Grand Forks, North Dakota. Find images of her work and links to more information about her on the Earth Eats website. That's eartheats.org. We're going to stay up in the Northern Plains region for a recipe from Chef Daniel Orr.
This is some wild rice that a friend of mine in Minnesota sent me.
The rice he's talking about is from Native Harvest. The wild rice, or manumen, is grown naturally in the lakes and rivers of northern Minnesota and is hand-harvested by Ojibwe tribal members using traditional methods.
I started with a cup of wild rice, then I added 3 cups of water, 1 peel from a clementine that had been dried, and then 2 bay leaves, about 1 teaspoon of salt, 1/4 teaspoon of black pepper, and then let that boil down until it was cooked. And you want to cook it until it pops. So you can see that when you put the seeds in there, they're tight little black pods. And when they're cooked, they explode and they open up. And then once wild rice is cooked, you want to cover it with the lid because when it steams, if you let it just steam out, it will actually kind of contract and get hard again. So you want to, once it's cooked through, leave it covered, let it cool down with a cover on it. I'm also going to add 2/3 of a cup of toasted slivered almonds. And to make this main course salad, so this would be great to have for lunch, I'm going to add some feta cheese. So that's going to give us some protein, a little bit of saltiness. So I'm going to add about cup of crumbled feta cheese. And then since we have an herb garden outside, I'm going to use some Thai basil. So I thought the Thai basil would be fun in this because it has kind of a licorice-y flavor. Will play nicely with the sweetness of the blueberries and the toastiness of the almonds. So we're just going to enrobe that with a little bit of olive oil, and enrobing is just lightly coating. So I added about 3 tablespoons. And I'm not going to over-season this because the feta has salt in it and the Thai basil has that licorice-y pepperiness to it. I'm going to let you taste it, Kate.
I love everything about that salad. The wild rice and the almond, so nutty. The fruit kind of popping and then that Thai basil. Yeah. All of it. It's just the feta, that salty, right. Creamy.
If you wanted to have this as a meatless Monday vegetarian meal, you could serve it with some soft tortillas. You could also serve it in some Napa cabbage leaves as a taco.
And you could just eat it.
Or you could just eat it.
I think I'm going to try to sneak out with it. Believe me when I tell you that this dish blew my mind. I went home and made it the very next day. I'll admit, chef's was better, and I attribute that to the quality of the rice. I'm going to look into ordering some of that wild rice from Minnesota. We have a link to Native Harvest on our website. Plus, of course, the recipe. EarthEats.org. That's it for Earth Eats this week. Thanks for listening, and thanks to everyone who helps with the show, including Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Alex Chambers, Mark Chilla, Taylor Killow, Daniel Orr, everyone at Farm Bloomington Restaurant, the IU Food Institute, and Harvest Public Media. Special thanks this week to Molly Douthit. Earth Eats theme music is composed by Aaron Toby and performed by Aaron and Matt Toby. Our executive producer is John Bailey. I'm Kate Young, and I produce the show. We'll be back next week. Production support comes from Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world, offering signature drinks, teas, and little eats. Located on Pete Ellis Drive, needmoreroasters.com. Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. And The Clean Bedroom, offering organic mattresses, adjustable beds, and pillows, helping mindful customers create a sustainable and organic clean bedroom step by step. New York City, Boston, and now Indianapolis. More at thecleanbedroom.com.